Welcome to Top 5, a show where we count things down from number 5 to all the way to number 1. And this week on the show, we are returning to an old favorite, Top 5 Comedies. Top 5 Comedies. We've done this one before, a year or two ago, I think. But people enjoy it when we revisit. They can compare what we did before, see what new things have been added into it. Or just say, hey, is this a repeat show? And then turn it off and go and do something else. But we hope you don't do that. And so this week we're going to be looking at top five comedies. Got a little something in my throat. Matthew, what do you have for your number 5?
I didn't realize we had done this before, so this is probably the exact same list. But my number 5 is a movie from 2001. A movie that Utter Disaster actually introduced me to. And I have to say, it has grown on me. The first time I saw it, I was like, eh. And the second time I saw it, I was like, okay, there's some amusement here. And about the fourth or fifth time that I saw Super Troopers, the story of 5 Vermont cops, actually highway patrol officers, who try to get past the fact that they're Vermont highway patrol officers by filling their boring days with shenanigans. And don't pistol whip me. I really felt like it kind of hit a groove. It's the work of a comedy troupe called Broken Lizard. And Broken Lizard is interesting because it seems like every decade there's like a 5-man group of people who changed the world of comedy, at least for me, because you got your Monty Python, you got your Kids in the Hall, you got your Ronald Reagan administration. So you go through there. And eventually you get to Broken Lizard. I think they've actually been supplanted, but I'm old and so I don't learn new things anymore. But Super Troopers is not just quotable, not just funny. It's weirdly relatable. There's a scene halfway through the movie where one of them is talking to his wife or his girlfriend about how if he loses his job, they're going to have to break up or move. And it's a completely straightforward discussion, a relationship discussion that anyone would have. But for some reason, he's carrying a bunch of bananas in one arm and some towels under the other. And the reason for those items is just this hilarious ending moment for that sequence. And then you finally do get to the end of the movie, and it has not just one of the great downer endings of all time, followed by an amazing swerve. It's really, really funny. And I think that the way I understand it, probably 40% of the movie has been semi-improvised, which I really appreciate. And it introduced me to the talents of Brian Cox, who I didn't realize is a genius and was in everything and was actually the first man to play Hannibal Lecter. So if you ever want to see Hannibal Lecter as the boss of 5 goofballs, who sort of run around and do things, definitely check out Super Troopers. That description does not do it justice. It's a very, very funny film.
All right. My number 5 is going to be very, very controversial because the person who made this is not a good person.
Oh,
yeah. Bad. He's a bad, bad person. In fact, he's in jail for being a bad person.
Whoa.
But better when we option. Talk about separating the art from the artist, and we just look at the art of what this person did, I think you could say that to my brother Russell, whom I slept with, is a fine bit of storytelling and comedy. And I know that that is somewhat controversial considering the person who recorded that album. But for about a decade, that was my go-to comedy album, just because it is literally... Side one of the album is all about how he, when he was younger, he and his brother had to sleep in the same bed, and it was a converted baby bed with the sides taken down, and they had to sleep in there, and they can't sleep, and they get into shenanigans, and they're keeping their dad awake at night, and they're getting into all sorts of trouble, and the dad, you know, keeps storming in and promising he's going to whip all the skin off their hide. It is one of the funniest things that this person has ever done. And if you ever want to separate the art from the artist and go and listen to the album, to my brother Russell, whom I slept with, it is worth it. That being said, I haven't listened to the album since the allegations came out and since the person went to jail. just on my own. But I feel comfortable talking about the album because it is a brilliant piece of storytelling in its own right. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. That's my number five. It is my top five audio to My Brother Russell, Whom I Slept With. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number five?
My number five is a TV show, a situation comedy, if you will. It's called Happy Endings. I've talked about Happy Endings before. It's, to me, the ultimate culmination of the Friends formula, where a lot of things go like, you know, It's Always Sunny is sort of like, what if Friends, but they're Seinfeld caliber sociopaths, right? Happy Endings is, what if Friends, but it was actually funny? I never liked Friends that much. So it's, if you like just sort of like good, tight sitcom writing, I strongly recommend Happy Endings, and I strongly recommend you check it out now, because as I've come to find out, comedy has an expiration date.
Yeah. See my number five.
Yeah. For one reason or another, if nothing is, if nothing else is that like the references fall off, you know, it's like, if you're, if you're like young, a younger person coming in, you have to like look up who these people are talking about to get the jokes. But Happy Endings is really good. It's a good combination of people. It has Damon Wayans Jr. It has that girl that was on Saturday Night Live for a couple seasons. It has that girl that did some sexy movies at the beginning of her stuff, but is actually a pretty good actress, and then did Happy Endings. It's pretty good.
Yeah, the problem is I'm trying to look up Happy Endings on the web just by typing in Happy Endings. Yeah, it doesn't give you the answers that you think that you're going to get on this.
Right. And Happy Endings streaming also doesn't help.
It's Casey Wilson, who is the girl who was on Saturday Night Live, and then Eliza Coop, who had been on Scrubs, the last couple of seasons of Scrubs right before this.
Yep. And Eliza, there's another Eliza in it.
Alicia Cuthbert, who I think was from 24.
Yeah, so she's been, all of those guys were in stuff and have been in stuff since then. It's got great jokes. Like, there's an episode all about the butterfly effect, but it's called the Butterfly Effect because it's about the running gag is about how things that you do affect other people and affect the future, just like that movie Ashton Kutcher did, affected his career for so long, right? So it's the butterfly effect. The banter between characters is great. Like, I was completely sold on this show. There's a wedding in end of season one or season two, and they're trying to figure out if somebody actually poisoned one of the members of the wedding party. And the back and forth is just absolutely hilarious. Sometimes I go and I just play that scene just to see the just excellent comedic timing. So if you get a chance to check out Happy Endings, I'll do the searching for you. It's on Hulu right now.
Oh, okay, good.
I would strongly recommend you check it out.
Okay. All right, there you go. There's our first entries into our number five comedies, ladies and gentlemen. And I think we've already struck gold. Can we get to platinum or humorusium by the end of the show? Let's find out with our number fours. Matthew, what do you have for your number four?
I'm afraid of the phrase humorusium. My number four, I was a little more literal, I think, than you guys, because when I read comedies, I'm thinking, oh, okay, films. So I have five movies. My number four movie is actually a movie as old as I am, actually a little bit older, because it came out in January of the year that I was born. And it spawned a very long-running television series, which is absolutely nothing like the movie MASH. If you've ever seen MASH, MASH is just one of the most Robert Altman films that ever did Robert Altman. The only one I can think of that's more Robert Altman is maybe Brewster McCloud, but it's based on a novel, and the writer of the novel hated the movie. The screenwriter of the movie hated the novel, and Robert Altman apparently just hated everybody. But it's the story, as you know, of surgeons at a mobile army surgical hospital during the Korean conflict. And the general characters from the first three seasons of MASH are here. In some cases, characters who bear those names and little else are here. But the main story ends up being about Hawkeye, who is a cardiologist, and an old sort of kind of colleague of his, a man named Trapper John, who shows up about 20 minutes into the film. And it's important to note that 20 minutes into the film, Trapper shows up, because about 5 minutes before that, you actually hear him in a scene, because Altman actually cut this movie together after apparently shooting hours and hours and hours of footage. So there are a couple of moments that seem to appear out of order that don't make sense, and somehow it's still really funny. It's the only thing I think I've ever found Robert Duvall funny in. I don't know if Robert Duvall has ever done anything else that was supposed to be funny, but it's got really, really talented actors, including Renee Bergenois, who grew up to be Odo from Star Trek Deep Space Nine and is like 12 in this. But if you watch MASH, you have to remember two things. First of all, it came out in 1970, but it was still the 60s. Second of all, Gary Berghoff does not age. So he is the same man in 1970 that he is in 1982. And third, and most important, the funniest character in the whole movie is a man named Sergeant Gorman, played by Bobby Troop from Emergency, who has just one line, but says it about four times. And that line is, so if you get through the film, just counting the times that you see Bobby Troop come through and say, I feel like you'll enjoy MASH the way I do. I don't know if it's aged well. I think that much like, you know, Stevens number five, there are moments that have gone, in retrospect, have gone past their expiration date. But I still enjoy it. And I'm a pretty progressive, you know, liberal kind of, this is horribly offensive, and yet I still laughed kind of guy. So take that caveat. My number four, MASH, the movie, not the television series.
My number four is a web recommendation from Rodrigo from, gosh, probably when we first met. And it is a web cartoon about a special kind of kid or adult and his magical group of friends, including Strong Bad and you know, his girlfriend and that other guy and Teen Girl Squad. I'm talking about Homestar Runner. If you've never had the joy, here's the problem. Homestar Runner, the brothers Chaps are the ones that created him. They were doing great back when Flash was a thing on the web, because they would make these really cool interactive bits on the site. Yep. Like every week or every month you could go up and there would be a new thing, and there were some interactions that you could click and move around on. Then sadly their father passed away, and so they went into, you know, kind of a shutdown mode for several years. And they have tried over the years to bring it back. They probably do like maybe one, maybe two new bits today. But because it's on YouTube, you don't have the fun clicky stuff, and you don't get to explore around and see, you know, other takes and stuff. But Homestar Runner, I guess I would say, is absurdist in its humor. It was supposed to be a funny take on children's literature. You know, like, Homestar is a runner, and he's going to run. Run, Homestar, runner, run. Run, Homestar won the race. Hooray!
He's a terrific athlete.
Yes, he is a terrific athlete. And so the absurdity of that series had me cracking up so much that I even found the other day, Rodrigo, they released a 4-DVD collection.
Yeah.
Back in the, it had to have been before 2006, They released a collection of all of their videos on DVD, and I snatched those up and I forced my wife to watch these with me, and she just thought it was the greatest thing. Sadly though, Homestar Runner is, I think, a little harder to find. You can't find, or maybe you can find it on their Homestar Runner YouTube page, but I don't think you can find all of the original, bits out there.
They've been uploading older things, but not all of the bits.
Like, okay.
That website was fully interactive, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
when you went there, you would get a menu, and it was a randomized menu, and different things would happen when you selected different parts of the menu, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's mostly gone, except because it's referenced in some of the cartoons, you can see it. I mean, the site is still up, I think, but most people absorb these things through YouTube nowadays, mm-hmm. which, yeah, it's like, it's interesting because you think as technology advances, things would just get better and denser and you'd have more ability to do things, but it's actually a loss, right? The mm-hmm. interactability of Flash went away and was replaced by videos that, you know, the only thing you can do to interact in them is to click on like advertiser sites.
Right. Right. Yeah. This was pretty informative back in the early days. My wife's nickname came from one of the characters in the show. Strong Bad certainly has some impact today when I go to the mailbox.
Sure.
I'm like, instead of checking the email, it's like checking the mail. And my kids just look at me like, what the heck are you talking about? And I have yet to sit them down and have them watch Homestar Runner. But I think the youngest would probably get a big kick out of it.
Yeah.
So my number four, Homestar Runner. If you can find it, go watch it. Certainly the very early, early stuff is classic, classic comedy. All right, Rodrigo, what do you have for your number four?
My number four is a movie. When I first saw it, I was sort of awestruck by it for two reasons. One, it's a horror comedy, but it definitely pushes more towards the comedy aspect than, say, something like An American Werewolf in London, which technically could be considered a horror mm-hmm. comedy, but I think is mostly a horror movie. That was one. And two, it really just aggressively hits you over the head with a sort of like rhyme aspect. Basically, every scene that you see at the beginning of the movie gets warped in some way once the zombie attack begins. Excuse me. And that movie, Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead is hilarious in general, but also I think it's just a very well put together movie. It really kind of, like I said, there's a lot of like, you see this scene and then later on it's the same scene, except it's been changed by the zombie apocalypse. Things that characters mm-hmm. say at the beginning, then when they say at the end, the context has changed. It includes probably the best needle drop of a Queen song that I've heard, that I've seen in a long time. And, you know, again, if you're into who's in here that then has gone on to do other things or was doing other things, obviously Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Lucy Davis, if you saw the UK Office, she's gone on to do other things. If you've seen The Tick, the Amazon Tick, Peter Serafinowicz is in this. So you got that going for you. Which is nice. So yeah, my number, what are we on?
Four.
Four, Shaun of the Dead.
Very nice. All right, Matthew, what do you have for your number three? We are midway through this list.
As we hit the midpoint, I feel like I've accidentally done one of those four movies to tell you who I am nonsenses. Because this is a movie that came out when I was 18, 1989's Heathers, one of the formative comedies, black comedies, but definitely formative comedies of my particular life and or humor. Because it's the, I don't even know if it's a story so much. It's basically a relationship gone horribly wrong. I don't know if it made Winona Ryder. It definitely made the career of Christian Slater, and features just a ton of "Hey, it's that guy" characters. Virtually everybody in this movie, you're going to look at it and go, "Why do I know her? Where do I know her from?" And she was probably in a scene of another teen movie being not quite as funny. And it's one of the few movies that can actually say that it ends with a 17-year-old exploding and having that be funny. Now, again, has not aged well. I feel like in a post-Columbine world, Heathers is just a monstrous, horrifying film. And definitely, if you've seen it and felt that and thought that, please note that as a huge, huge proponent of this movie and its humor, I definitely feel that. I definitely know that it's there. But boy, this is still a fun movie. It's a terrible movie. It is so over the top, and the humor is just so very 90s. And, you know, the year before the 90s began, I guess technically it's sort of the example of what would become the 90s. If you've never seen Heathers, and you appreciate me and my humor, I definitely recommend looking at Heathers and seeing if it gives you kind of a new view into my head. If you don't appreciate my humor, sorry. I mean, I only talk for 3 or 4 minutes at a time. And most importantly, my number three on the list, if you put it together with the other four, you will probably not make me, but you'll find a person that people who know me find eerily familiar for some reason.
All right. My number three, also a movie. There's a meme going around right now saying something about, without saying Shrek, name your favorite Eddie Murphy movie, which I don't know why anybody would say Shrek is their favorite Eddie Murphy movie.
Oh, because kids love Shrek, man.
Oh, like, okay.
I must have been too old, but anybody who is younger than me loves Shrek. They love it so much. And like, again, you have these like mini generations in between. Like some of them kind of love it ironically, but most of them don't. Most kids love Shrek. And by kids, I mean people in their 30s and below.
Wow. All right.
Those are kids.
Back in my day, Eddie Murphy was on this thing called Saturday Night Live. That's where most of us discovered him. Or if you were able to get a copy of a copy of a copy of his comedy album that was circulating around the middle school, then by all accounts, you were an underage child waiting to get into the movies to see Beverly Hills Cop. Beverly Hills Cop, of course, is about a street smart Alex Foley from the streets of Detroit detective who is following up on a murder case, and it takes him to Beverly Hills, California, where he meets the uptight police force there. Featuring Judge Reinhold and Ronnie Cox and John Ashton. And they get into all sorts of hilarious adventures, including a giant shootout in a Beverly Hills mansion at the end of the movie. And fish out of water movies tend to do fairly well, I think. And when you've got somebody who is right on a comedic high, that is Eddie Murphy by 1984. I think this perfectly encapsulates Eddie Murphy before, and I don't want to say sellout, but definitely is Eddie Murphy before he found out that, oh, I just have to show up and say a few funny things and people give me money, kind of things. This is a good movie. This is a really good movie. I know a lot of people like Beverly Hills Cop 2 better. I don't. And hopefully nobody out there is like, no, I like Beverly Hills Cop 3. It's the best.
There's a three.
Three is better than two, in my opinion.
Oh, God.
Why? Which one? Wait, which one's the one at the amusement park?
Number three.
Oh, that is three. Okay.
Yeah. Beverly Hills Cop is still a classic today because, you know, no one expects the banana in the tailpipe. Routine. So my number three, Beverly Hills Cop. There you go. All right, Rodrigo, now on to your number three.
My number three is another TV show. that also, like Happy Endings, ended right at its like zenith of comedy. And I think that's part of the reason why I like to go back and revisit these shows, is because they never had the opportunity to get stale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, although I've seen comedies that get stale right away, right, in the first season. So it's not just that. The writing's good, but also they didn't go off long enough to overstay their welcome. I'm talking about Better Off Ted, a comedy that I've talked about before, and one that, so this show came out in 2009, I think. 2009 to 2010. It is now 2024, and all of the jokes in it about capitalism, the uncaringness, like how little a company cares about its employees, how much the government just steps aside if enough money is involved, unfortunately continue to be extremely relevant. Like, there are, I watched an episode of Roseanne recently, and
by choice?
No, it was for work.
All right, forgive me.
So in it, everybody's like real excited that they're gonna go to the video store to rent some videos, some VHSs, right? And it took me a while to realize, because I wasn't paying super close attention to the beginning, that this was an episode about them getting their first VCR, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is a moment that has now been lost to time. There are people that remember that. There are people who were there when they first got their first VCR. But any new person that comes in, any younger person that comes in, is not going to relate to that unless they relate to it like sideways. Like, I remember when I first got my first next-gen video game console, right? Or something like that. But it's not the same. It's just not the same thing. Better Off Ted just is completely relevant. Almost nothing about it, except maybe for like a few pop culture references here and there, just continues to be like, there's jokes about generating meat, right? Like creating meat that is not out of an animal. And then they realize that if the meat is like sad, it tastes better. Or something like that. The joke is something like that. It's basically like engaging the meat as if it was an animal makes it better. There is a joke about how their system for keeping the lights on, right, for like their motion detectors, were not calibrated for Black people. So if a Black person is there by themselves in the office, the lights turn off on them. So the fix that the company comes up with at first is just so ridiculous, but you think this could actually, like, I can see a company actually doing this, especially as clowns like Elon Musk are like consistently in the news, and they see themselves as these like visionary CEOs, right?
Yeah.
One last thing that I'll point out, there's an actress that she's not in every episode. Her name's Carla Jimenez. She was in Raising Hope,
mm-hmm.
also as not part of the main cast, but she's in Raising Hope, and where she plays a maid, which doesn't feel too bad because the main mom character is also a maid. She was also in The Mick, where she plays a maid, but in Better Off Ted, she plays a scientist. So there you go.
Nice. All right. I remember you talking about that. I think I've watched a couple of episodes of that show, but then for whatever reason, it slipped off my radar and I forgot to get back to it. So
I had the pleasure/horrible experience of having worked for a Six Sigma company,
mm-hmm.
and it just like these jokes just like get to me in my soul.
Did they make you get the certification?
No. I was just like, I was a little peon. Only like management and above needed the certification.
Yeah, I am Sigma 6 certified, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Pitchforks. People with pitchforks and torches are going to come to your house, Matthew.
No, don't do it. That means he's unlocked his psychic powers.
Hey, before we get into our top two, I just want to remind everybody that if you enjoy this show, you find some humor in it, and you want to see it continue, then I would ask for you to join us over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. That's where you can come and be like the fine patrons of the Renaissance period who saw and wanted to support the arts and great talent. And so they gave a little bit of their vast fortunes to the creators so that they could be entertained week after week with podcasts or, who knows, the Sistine Chapel or, you know, a Statue of David or something. Who knows what they were doing. But today you can support us for just a couple of bucks a month. $5 a month can keep this show going far into the future. Find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. All right, Matthew, what do you have for your number two?
I'm just trying to imagine what Michelangelo's podcast would be like.
Hey, it's me, Michelangelo. The name of my show is I'm a Smarter Than a You. Shut up, you knucklehead.
If I recall my history, I'm pretty sure Michelangelo's podcast would have a rotating cast of like young, attractive men.
Yes.
that he would interview and then probably never see again.
Giuseppe, you know that I have this system where I go to sleep every 6 hours. Would you like to be part of this system with me?
Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, exactly.
It will be right back. All right, Matthew, what do you have for your number two?
Excellent. My number two is one of those movies that I appreciated and enjoyed when I saw it in my teens. But I gained a new appreciation for it when my kid saw it and loved it. And so over the last 2 or 3 years, I have probably seen Clue from 1985 at least a dozen times, just watching. If it's on, we watch it. And of course, you know, with the cable channels, it'll get into rotation. It'll stay there for a couple of months. But this movie is a revelation because everybody in the movie is an incredibly talented actor that you know from something. So there are actually only, I think, 9 people in the movie, maybe 10, if you don't count the moment where occasionally, you know, police will show up. But the movie Clue is based on the board game Clue, which apparently is known as Cluedo for people who are not in the continental United States. So the movie may be known as Cluedo there. And the movie was released originally with 3 different endings. And I believe there was some sort of contest to figure out which was the correct one. And the winner, I don't know, got like an air conditioner or something. But when you sit down and you watch this movie, it is just a masterclass in watching comedians play their character perfectly well. Tim Curry plays the butler, and just this amazing cast. Christopher Lloyd, who is, of course, Doc Brown. Michael McKean, who's Lenny from Laverne and Shirley. Martin Mull, who's just funny in everything. Eileen Brennan, Leslie Ann Warren. It stars both the lead singer of the Go-Go's and the lead singer of the punk band Fear, which probably none of you have heard of, but they were the ones who were on Saturday Night Live one time, and their bassist hit himself in the face with his bass and then bled for the second entire performance, and it was just a whole thing. But I'm not going to tell you what happens in the movie, but if you know the game Clue, you know that somebody dies, and you know that there's murder weapons, and you have to figure it out. So if you have not seen my number two, remember that it's 1 + 2 + 1 + 1 and not 1 + 2 + 2 + 1. And even if it were, it would be 1 + 2 + 1 + 1, not 1 + 1 + 2 + 1. And if you understood any of that, then definitely go and watch Clue right now. It's probably on cable, like literally airing somewhere live where you are. Just go look for it.
All right, for my number two, television. I've done an audio bit, I've done a web bit, I've done a movie bit. Now it's time for a television bit. And in the 90s, this was part of, I think, pretty much all throughout the 90s. This was part of the must-see TV, where everybody would stop what they were doing on a Thursday night and watch Seinfeld, and then stand around the water cooler the next day talking about it. I think the end of Seinfeld probably kind of marked the end of the monoculture. just because of how influential it was on the landscape of things. But, you know, it's a great show. Great lines, great bits. Even today, people are still quoting Seinfeld, and the show's been off the air for 20 years, something like that, 25 years. So if you've never seen an episode of Seinfeld, even my kids have seen Seinfeld. The oldest boy went through a binge when it was, what was it, on Netflix the last time before it moved over to wherever it's at now. And just watched every single episode and was like, yeah, this is a pretty funny show. I can see why your generation liked it. Thanks a lot there, kid. But Seinfeld, it's a show about nothing, but it sure had a lot of laughs. So there you go. That's my number two. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number two?
My number two is another movie. It's one that I like to revisit frequently, although I think I've kind of slipped and haven't seen it in probably 3 years now. And that's Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
So I really like musicals. I don't like every musical, right? It's not like if something's a musical, I like it better. But I like movies that are musicals. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou has a lot of like diegetic music.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fun. It's also like, you know, old-timey, bluegrassy music. So it's interesting. It's not the type of soundtrack that you might be used to with a lot of Hollywood movies. But it's good times. It also, again, star-studded cast, right? George Clooney, Tim Blake Nelson, who I think since then has become a lot bigger than he was at the time. Yeah. But, you know, Holly Hunter, John Goodman, John Turturro, like very, very strong character actors.
Charles Durning.
Yep. Papio Daniel. And
The Devil.
The Devil is also in it, which brings me to my next thing. Not only is it a musical comedy, but it's set in a particular time in a particular place. And they gave it at least two real characters, right? One of them is Tommy Johnson. Tommy Johnson is in this, like legendary blues musician Tommy Johnson, and Babyface Nelson, legendary bank robber Babyface Nelson, right? They are like, these are just characters that our band of escapees run into multiple times. Actually, Tommy kind of sticks with them for a little while. And yeah, it's hilarious. I think a lot of people don't realize that those are real people. You can go read up on them and then go back and watch Oh Brother, Where Art Thou and get a kick out of that. It's also, on top of everything else, it's supposedly based on the Odyssey, very loosely based on the Odyssey. when I first saw it, I was actually annoyed because I had read the Odyssey. This was a very long time ago. And I was like, this is like barely anything like the book. Right. And it's like, it took me a while to be like, okay, well, it's not actually based on the Odyssey. It's like very broadly, like these are a few of the themes of the Odyssey to spice up our Southern hillbilly musical extravaganza. Good times. Check it out.
Yeah, very good. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have reached our number one. Matthew, what do you have for your number one comedy?
I am almost certain that this will come as no surprise to anyone who knows me, but my number one comedy, and again, I went with all film, is 1994's Clerks. If I had to pick a single film, which I quote more than any, it would be Clerks. And that is a high bar. I mean, you can say, everybody can say that, but I quote movies without realizing I'm quoting movies. And the movie Clerks is just like ingrained into my very DNA. And I will say this. I want to make this clear. I've seen Clerks 3. I do not forgive Kevin Smith for Clerks 3. And I feel like Kevin Smith is one of those filmmakers who, much like me, believes that a dead horse is never completely dead until you've really, really hit it a few times to make sure that it's dead. And so I feel like Kevin definitely goes back to the well, maybe even more than I would choose to. But, you know, it's a choice that he's made. It's a thing that he does. But in Clerks, you're kind of looking at like a 26-year-old filmmaker scraping together money to tell what is essentially his story. It's the story of a bunch of guys, a couple of guys actually, who work in a convenience store and some of the interactions that they have. As the Viewisk universe, which grows out of Clerks, goes on, it becomes clear that this day is the only interesting day that Dante and Randall ever had. And for the next 45 million years, they're going to be talking about this one day that happened in the movie Clerks. But if you just sit down and kind of watch it, and even if you watch it with the expectation of, I'm now going to, I don't know, maybe drink the very blood of the DNA of the Generation X, I feel like Clerks will definitely still hold up. And probably the best part about it is that there are no professional actors in it, really. There are no professional filmmakers. There are moments where you're like, why did he cut away to that shot? And the answer is because when he was producing the film, he burned the film and had to have a cutaway to hide the fact that he screwed up. But if you just sit down and you watch it, it's kind of like the movie equivalent of garage rock, like an album that somebody made with their cousin in their basement. And I've always loved that. And I love a movie that, you know, opens with just this endless dull drudgery of not necessarily my meaningless brainless job, but a meaningless brainless job. And anybody who's ever answered a phone or delivered a paper or gone door to door or done telemarketing or stood behind a counter, you'll feel this movie. You'll feel it in your gut. You'll feel it in your bones. You might even hate it. And that's why you'll love it. My number one movie, Clerks.
All right. My number one is audio, is a video game, is a movie, is a television. It's all of these things that I've kind of talked about before. Well, not web, but we'll say video game. And it works in every incarnation. In fact, every incarnation that this comedy has taken part in is slightly different. Still same theme, still same plot points, but oftentimes just a little something added to it to make it completely different. And listen, I know it's 2024 and we are looking outside every morning and we're like, oh my God, it's the worst day ever. Well, you're not Arthur Dent. Not only is he waking up and finding that his house is being torn down to make way for a bypass, his whole planet Earth, our planet, gets destroyed to make way for a hyperspace bypass. And so thanks to his good friend Ford Prefect, the two of them go flying through the galaxy on adventures as Ford tries to complete his entry for the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the guide that everyone needs as they travel the universe. Douglas Adams will be missed, but man, every incarnation of this, of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, is always a treat to explore and always reminds you that you should always know where your towel is. So that is my number one, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number one?
My number one is a movie and a play that I've always liked it. I first saw it as a movie when I was in high school, and it really stuck with me. And I kind of didn't see it again for years, but I thought about it a lot. And when I started watching it again, I noticed a lot more things about it, a lot more things I liked. As it turns out, I married someone who's a huge fan of it. I have since gone and seen live performances of Little Shop of Horrors, and it is hilarious. It's really funny. It is another piece of media that continues to be sort of aggravatingly relatable and current. It's like, obviously it's like a big wacky comedy with a giant plant puppet, but what the characters are feeling, where the characters come from, what the characters will do for success, feels like it could have been written today. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or recently at least. You just, you know, if you're a kid, you just got to look up what Skid Row is. But once you do, you know what they're talking about. The name for Skid Row changes, but Skid Row doesn't change. If you like the movie, There's two movies. One that is not a musical, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then one that was created after it was turned into a musical. I would say watch the musical. The musical has great songs. The original movie I've seen once a long time ago, and I just don't think it's as good. But you know, Jack Nicholson's in it.
Yeah.
The movie that I think most people have seen and the most accessible way of watching this, you know, again, lots of fun people are in it. Rick Moranis, Steve Martin, Jim Belushi's in it. Bill Murray's in it. Although those last two briefly, same thing with John Candy. Something that you might not think about necessarily going in when you look at like pictures of the cast is like, oh yeah, here's like, you know, Ellen Green and Rick Moranis and stuff. And these are the main characters. But this is actually kind of a who's who for like 90s black women in comedy. Like mm-hmm. Tashina Arnold is in this. Tisha Campbell is in this. Michelle Weeks also. The chorus, like the Greek chorus in it, is also went on to do like really good things. It features incredible puppetry. Frank Oz, I believe, was in charge of it and inside the plant a lot of the time. It also features really good camera trick special effects. You know, when the vine wraps itself around something, if you really look, you can tell that like the film is reversed, right? It's like they wrap the vine around something and then pulled it loose. And of course, some of the songs were too fast for the puppet, so you just couldn't move its mouth up and down and operate the lips fast enough, so they slowed it down. So if you pay really close attention, you can see Rick Moranis singing at about like halftime along with the plant. But when you speed it all up, it all works. It's like, it's really good. The one thing that you don't get with the movie is the quote unquote alternate ending, which was the original ending in which the plants win. But if you go online, you can track down the movie version of that, which I think is like just a storyboard and a few actual shots that were shot along with their recording of it. But anytime you go watch it live, I think that's the only ending that live productions do. So if you did get a chance to watch it live, you get to watch a different ending to Little Shop of Horrors.
There you go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, our top five comedies. It's quite a list. Some of them you've probably seen or heard or read or viewed in some way, shape, or form. Maybe some of them are new to you. Maybe you disagree with some of the things that are on our list. That's okay, too. Here's what you can do. You can head over to the Major Spoilers Discord server. It's free to join. There's a link in the show notes. Again, in this day and age, how many things do you get that are free with no strings attached? All you got to do is join the Discord server for free. You can go over there and join a growing group of awesome people, hang out, chat about different things. But we do have different channels, including the Top 5 channel, where you can go in and share your top 5 comedies. Other people will share their top 5 comedies, and you'll read their list and they'll read your list. Why? Because everybody loves a list.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.